Today on The Grave Talks, Memories That Don't Fade, a conversation with Jeff Kunkel. Jeff Kunkel experienced true paranormal trauma as a child. The 2 months that Jeff and his family spent in a haunted house would leave him with a lifetime of stories and mental scars that would never fully heal. A force with enough strength to propel BBs at passing cars, with the force of a rifle, lodge floppy kitchen knives into the sides of a solid oak cabinet, and pull a fully grown man off his bed in the middle of the night, just some of the experiences that Jeff had as a child. Experiences that would lead him on a lifelong journey to find answers as to why we are surrounded by unseen spirits and forces.
12 years old, my friend.
What happened?
12 years old. I lived in Springfield, Illinois. We moved there.
Okay.
And mom and dad decided that they got a rental house. You know, it's just like something right off of Paranormal Survivor. I'm looking at these things going, wow. You know? I'm like, oh, I'm one of those statistics.
Yeah.
It happened there. 12 years old, we moved into a house. Pretty cheap rent. You know, the whole thing that ran through. Nothing. I think we got there the first day that we got there. We were taking our mattresses upstairs, pick our rooms, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Running up there, 12 years old, you want to get your room. So my brother got one right off the stairwell, you know, right before it goes down the stairs.
Sure.
And we were all kicking back in that room. And we heard footsteps coming up the stairs, so we thought it was our parents. We're like, oh, crap, we got to get up and get moving.
Yeah.
So we get up, we start running back downstairs, and there's nobody coming up. But, you know, us as kids, we didn't think anything of it at the time.
Sure.
So we went on about our merry way and started doing, you know, getting moved in. And then it really started about a week after we moved into the place. So this is something I really don't talk about a lot. I've only talked to one other person about it.
Yeah.
Because the nightmares that I get from it are, you know, it gets pretty bad sometimes.
Sure.
I still to this day, but I know some of the things that you hear from people that say, you know, what happened to them, you know, you have to believe it, because the things that I went through is, wow. I mean, okay, let's just put it this way. You know those old mirrors that's got the gold flake on it and kind of spirally in the mirror? They're like little 10-inch square mirrors that you can put on your wall?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. The whole hallway was filled with mirror.
Okay.
Okay, so when you went upstairs, you saw your reflection all the way down the hallway.
Yeah.
There was 3 rooms upstairs, and there was a bathroom in the middle of it all, and then there was 1 room downstairs just right off the kitchen, along with the cellar door, which looked like, you know, people back in Illinois didn't have fences in their yards. It was just open yard space.
Sure.
And the cellar doors, you know, they opened up outside like the double doors that came into the ground, and inside the door looked like something out of Get Smart. You know, they were deadbolts all the way down it, and then the chain locks. My little brother Corby got the room off of the kitchen. Okay. And he had an Emmett Kelly doll, like a puppet.
Yeah.
A hand puppet. Yeah, he kept that with him all the time. It was a big old plastic head with a foam body, you know.
Yeah.
And the week after we moved in, we were, you know, still hearing footsteps and stuff like that. My mom was like, you know, mom and stepdad didn't think anything of it, and telling us we're just hearing crap and seeing things. But one night, we were all running around the house, and we ran back to my brother Corby's room, and his Emmett Kelly doll was on the floor in a shoebox. He made a bed for it.
Mm-hmm.
When we ran back into the room, it was physically sitting up in the center of his bed. And this doll does not do that. The head is so heavy that it just kind of folds in on itself.
Yeah, it's cloth.
Yeah, and cotton on the inside of it.
Yeah.
So we kind of flipped out, screamed, ran out of the room. Mom came in there and go, what's wrong? You know, and she said, go look at the doll. He's sitting up on the bed, you know, and walked back in there, and of course the doll was folded over on the bed like nothing.
Yeah.
She goes, you guys need to stop playing these jokes and stuff. This stuff isn't funny anymore.
Yeah.
And she didn't believe us throughout the whole, you know, except... Okay, this thing was basically after me and my stepbrother.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, we were up in our bedroom, okay? And my stepbrother, he was like a... He was one of those kids who liked to do stupid crap. So we had the bedroom window open upstairs, and there was a busy street down below us. And he was chucking BBs at the cars passing by.
Mm-hmm.
BBs from a BB gun. And
sure.
I was like, man, somebody's going to stop. You need to stop doing that. And so we're like hiding behind the window and kind of giggling at the same time. And before I knew it, I seen him pick up a BB and get ready to throw it. Then his arm kind of whipped back like something had a hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
And chucked that BB and shattered the front windshield of a vehicle. And his arm was pulled out of socket. He was screaming and crying. And, you know, stepfather came upstairs. What the hell happened? We tried to tell him. He's like, are you guys screwing around up here? Took him to the hospital. They put it back into place, put him in an arm brace. And he was scared shitless.
Yeah.
Told me that something had grabbed him and chucked it right out of his hand. And I was like, whoa, you know, and this is some, you know, he's pissed now. He's upset. And we have a walk-in closet in our bedroom. It's huge. It was huge. When you're 12 years old, I collected like every Star Wars figure and every ship known to man.
Sure.
I had it all stacked in this closet because I used to play with that crap all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting on my bed. I actually still have the comic book I was reading to this day. I still have it in my collection. I was sitting on my bed reading my comic book, right? And the closet door was opened up about, I don't know, a good 4 inches. You could actually see into the closet type shit. And I'm just looking at my comic book, and I look up, and there it is, the two eyes that I've heard so much about. And I mean, now I've heard so much about, but there were two red glowing eyes in the closet. I don't know. I froze. All right. I froze in fear. And I'm just looking, and my stepbrother looked over at me from his bed, and he goes, what's wrong? He saw me go pale. And I just pointed to the closet, and I go, there's something in the closet. There's something in the freaking closet. And then he gets pissed, you know, because his arm and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, being the stepbrother that he was and a year older than me, he thought he was going to be a Barney badass. And step up and start cursing at it and telling it, come out of here, come out, because he saw the eyes. He's like, you ain't nothing. He's like, come out of that closet, come on. And before we knew it, the door slammed shut, and it sounded like a bomb went off in the closet. And my stepfather, stepmother ran upstairs, yelled, what the hell is going on in here? Who are we yelling? Are you guys fighting? What's going on? And we just both pointed to the closet. My stepfather opened up the closet door, and in the middle of the floor, in a perfect pile, was all my Star Wars figures and my ships, and they were ripped apart. And there wasn't a piece out of place. I mean, it wasn't out of place of the pile.
Yeah.
It was a perfect circle in the center of the closet floor, and everything was in a perfect pile. Heads are ripped off some of the figures. The legs are ripped off the landing gear. The X-Wing was broken in two. You know, things like that.
Like permanent damage type thing? Or assemble again? Damage. Oh, wow. Okay.
Permanent damage. You're talking like if you get an angry child that decides to rip the head off its doll.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And you can't get that head back on that doll unless you use super glue.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But... So we got blamed for it because, you know, typical kid, you know, parents don't believe. And so we had to clean up the mess. I didn't want to go into the closet, but we were made to. And he stood there while we did it, which I thought was great because I didn't want to go in there by myself.
Sure.
After all that stuff was cleaned up, I didn't even want to sleep in the house anymore. And I was coming out of my bedroom after it was all said and done. And I was walking down the hallway, And I happened to look into the glass mirror, one of the frames of it, you know, one of the 10-inch squares that was on the wall, and I looked, and it cracked right when I looked at it.
Wow.
And then it started getting freaking nuts after that. And then my parents started to believe.
Yeah.
We were all downstairs, and my mom was in the kitchen. She was doing dishes. And she had just got through, you know, drying everything off, and she was putting, okay, hold on. She was taking her steak knives, okay?
Yeah.
You know those metal with the plastic-ended steak knives you had when you were a kid?
Sure.
Okay, they were very flexible. Your parents bought them dime a dozen.
Yes.
And that's what we used. You know, everybody used them.
Yep.
And the kitchen had solid oak cabinetry, okay?
Sure.
Thick cabinet. So my mom puts the dishes away. She closes the drawer. She walks out of the kitchen. We're at the table. And no sooner did she walk out of the kitchen than it sounded like, you know how all the knives, forks, and spoons get thrown on the floor type shit?
Sure.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me.
No, you can swear all you want. Go for it.
That's what happened. That's
okay.
What happened. You heard a big old
yeah.
And doors slam and crap like that. And she gets up and she runs back in there. Two of the cabinet doors are open. She's looking. She doesn't see anything else except for two of those plastic steak knives. You know, I call them plastic steak knives.
Sure.
But they have metal steak knives, but they have plastic handles.
Yeah.
Shoved all the way through a solid oak cabinet. To the butt of the plastic.
Yeah.
And she's looking and she's flipping out, and then she opens up the drawer, and the place where you put all your silverware,
yeah.
You know, that little strainer thing you put in your drawer?
Sure.
Had no silverware in it. It was all to the outside edge. And then she started flipping, and that's when she started kind of understanding the things that were going on, because now it wasn't going after literally me as it was my parents now, because whatever was there was trying to make them believe, you know?
Sure.
And
you know, and I want to
went after my little brother.
And I want to talk about what happened once your parents started to believe, but before we even get to that point, I want to talk about what it was like leading up to there, where you and your little brother are having these experiences. Obviously, they're very, very real. You're having these experiences. You're hearing these things. You're seeing these things. And I mean, your toys are destroyed. I mean, it's things where it's not just some kid is being, you know, rambunctious or, you know, trying to make a scene. Kids typically don't destroy the toys that they value and they treasure and then put them in a weird pile in the middle of their closet. I mean, that's like more of the sign of like, okay, I think we need to get some therapy here. There's something else going on. But
exactly.
I mean, but for you to, for them to discover this and to see things like that happening, do you think that they had any suspicions that there may be more going on at first, and they were trying to be, you know, responsible parents, you know, because it's obviously it's a situation where unless you're in that moment, you don't know how to handle it. And one of the routes to take as a parent would be, well, stay calm. Don't give in and say this is a ghost, even if you think it might be. Just, you know, you're trying to keep the sanity and trying to keep the kids calm down until you can figure it out, whether it is a ghost or some crazy possum that has amazing abilities that lives in your closet.
Yeah, or a raccoon.
Yeah, or a raccoon, yeah. It's like, this is going to be like a circus showstopper raccoon once we find it, but it's probably a ghost. Do you think they...
All the way, that's a clown popped out of the closet.
Exactly. It's a whole circus in there. Do you think that they had been suspecting things were going on, or were they kind of in the denial state, kind of let's rationalize this up until the point
Were for the first half we were there.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we were only in that house maybe 2 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. Because since the first time, see, they didn't have a bedroom.
Okay.
So my parents took the little entryway. There was an entryway where you can sit by the front door. and it was kind of half blocked off, so they took and put a curtain in front of that and turned that into their bedroom.
Okay.
And that, for being where it was, they always said that that room was so freaking cold.
Yeah.
They couldn't understand, you know, because, I mean, it's like right there.
Yeah.
And it was the coldest room in the house.
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't know if they believed then.
Yeah.
But as much as my mom's eyes popped open the day of the silverware incident.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she believed after that day.
With the
stepfather.
I was just going to ask you, with the silverware incident, and this is going to lead directly into asking about your stepfather, was he present at the moment of the silverware incident?
No, he was driving. He drove a semi-truck.
Okay, so he wasn't there to see it. But obviously, when you get home and you see the plastic, you know, ends of the knives and the metal jammed through solid oak, which really is kind of a physical impossibility if you think of it, of like, just if you tried to do that, you couldn't do that. You'd almost like,
you break the knife.
Yeah, you would need to like saw into the oak itself to create a space for it, like a screw, and then you could insert it. You couldn't just stab the clock or the cabinet. But somehow,
I mean, I was 12 years old,
yeah,
you know, and you could take those knives and physically bend them,
sure,
like they were, I know they were thin metal,
yeah,
and plastic, very cheap.
Yeah.
And you could flex them, you know? It was like,
yeah,
it was what it was when you were a kid. You would thought it was a normal steak knife.
Sure. The defying physics of what they did, not only of I mean, it's one thing, and it's scary and bizarre and creepy of just the ones moving around in the drawer, but to have them lodged into the oak cabinetry takes it to a whole new level. And almost you almost look at that and you go, it's a knife, it's stabbed into something. Most would take that almost as, you know, kind of a threatening gesture in some way, shape, or form. How did your mom, obviously your mom was upset, but what did your stepdad think about it when he found out?
He was a little what the hell are you talking about? And he had to go in there and physically take him out with pliers.
Yeah.
He had to break the ends off and he had to pull him through. I mean, he's like, he didn't understand. He's like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
You know, and then that night was when Corby, he couldn't sleep in his room anymore. There was too much stuff happening. So he was going to come. He went downstairs to grab all of his stuff. And he was going to come upstairs with us. You know, we were waited by the edge of the stairwell because, you know, I didn't want to go downstairs that, you know, I just, whatever.
Yeah.
I was scared. You know, my brothers, I was close as I could be close to them without, you know, hanging off their backs.
Mm-hmm.
And Corby went into his room, and when he came out, he didn't even touch his Emma Kelly doll. He left it there. And when he came out, the cellar door swung open and smacked him in his face, knocked him to the ground. And he screamed and cried and stuff. So we all ran. My mom and dad got up. Boom. And they all ran to the kitchen. The door, and he told them, he says, the door hit me. The door hit me. You can see it on his face. It's red.
Yeah.
And it's starting to, you know, swell up. And my stepfather's looking at it and gets him up off the ground and looks at the back door. And it's completely locked. All those deadbolts and all those little chain things are locked. But he, you know, Corby said it opened, it hit him in the face.
Yeah.
And so that night we went upstairs and we, you know, had ice pack on his face. We were just laying there. We didn't even go to sleep.
Yeah.
We were hearing all kinds of shit happening in the house. And then the next day my mom's sitting there and she's looking for another place to live. You know, my stepfather, he's out driving, you know, doing his thing.
Yeah.
And so how'd this go? My mom was getting ready to cook dinner. And you know those big old steel crock pots? I mean, it's a giant pot.
Sure.
Silver pot. And she puts it on the stove. And she gets ready, you know, and she turns the stove on. She goes to put water in it. And then she screams. And we all ran to the kitchen and go, what? And you look at the bottom. I mean, looking at the bottom of the crock pot, and you see right there on the outer, you know, the inner edge of that thing, you see a pentagram nicely burned into the edge of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, a 10, it flips you out. I mean, I know pentagrams are, you know, it is what it is, and people use them for satanic, people use them for, you know, certain other things, and, you know, sometimes it's not considered evil, sometimes it is. You know, now I know this, by the way.
Sure.
But being a kid, you flip out because you see, you know, I grew up on horror movies. Come on, you see a pentagram, it's like, oh my God, it's a sign of the devil. You're done.
Yeah.
So my brother flipping out. So she goes, go throw this thing away. So we take it out in the backyard. Instead of throwing it away, we decided to dig a hole and bury it.
Mm-hmm.
We did. We dug a hole out in the backyard. We buried it in the backyard. All right. And after that was all said and done, that night, my mom screams again in the kitchen, and we ran in there, and she thought we were playing joke on us at first. On her at first, that pot was back in that cupboard.
God.
And that pot was filled with dirt, and it was in the lower cupboard, right next to the, you know, the silverware drawer. And she flipped it, so we took it out in the backyard and we chopped it up.
Yeah,
we chopped it up. Axe. We never seen it after that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, it just started get, it was getting bad. And then my brothers were in the room at the other end of the hallway, and the room, you know, there was vinyl, you know, the wallpaper stuff was on the walls, and if you peeled some of that wallpaper back, the room was black. It had black paint on the walls.
Mm-hmm. Which is bizarre. I mean, not exactly a common paint color at any point in history.
You know, yeah. And then, you know, we never went down into the cellar at all. That was one place we never went. Because it felt really weird down there. Even as a kid, you're looking down and they're going, what? Why do? Ooh, that's, I don't want to go down there. Because you get that feeling. I think to this day, our bicycles are still down there. I'm not sure. My stepfather was like, put the bikes down in the basement so they don't get stolen.
Mm-hmm.
So we opened up the door and the ghost rided them down in there. Let them just go. Well, okay, they're down there. You know, close the doors and that was it. But that night, everybody's trying to get some sleep. And this is when it really hits home.
Mm-hmm.
Is when it goes after my mom and my stepdad. They're sleeping. And from, you know, when my mom told us, she finally believed everything that was going on. I mean, she believed, but she didn't believe at all. But now she did.
Mm-hmm.
When she was laying there, you know, the covers were being pulled out, pulled down. And she thought Roger was, you know, pulling the covers off. She's like, honey, quit. You know, she's pulling the covers back up.
Yeah.
You know, he's asleep. He's dead asleep. And then they go down again. So she pulls him up again. And then Roger wakes up. He goes, what are you doing? And then when the covers are going down, she goes, well, stop pulling the covers. So he grabs the covers angrily. He goes, I'm not pulling the covers. And he pulls them up. Right when he starts pulling them up, whatever had a hold of the covers at the other end of the bed pulled so hard it ripped him off the bed.
Oh, my God.
And he hit the floor, and he got up. And he's like, what the hell? And it's really cold in their room. And, you know, the chandelier in the living room right over the kitchen table starts shaking, pounding upstairs. It starts going in a whirlwind of shit that's happening in this house. It's a big mess, and it scared the shit. Just, you know, it scared the shit out of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're finally at the point of this. We couldn't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We had a van that we came in when we drove up there, and it was parked in the backyard. So we all decided, you know, I'm sleeping in the van, and we all got out there. My mom and stepdad, they slept in the front seat, and we're in the back end of this thing, just all sprawled out back there.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, I mean, it wouldn't even let us sleep in the van. This thing, whatever it was out there shaking the freaking van. It was just unbelievable. The next day, we ran in, grabbed our clothes, and left everything there. You know, it was like typical paranormal survivor type shit. You can have the clothes, you can have the TV, you can have the furniture. We're out of here, you know?
Yeah.
And we left. And to this day, I mean, that's kind of what got me into the middle of all this stuff. wanted to know why.
What happened with the property after you left?
Well, my aunt still lives up there.
Okay.
I don't know why I asked her to go buy this property. And but she did, and she took pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have them on my other phone to this day. I mean, it's just one of those things that, you know, I had to have them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because what I do and what I create and what I build to find these, to find out what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I need to know. The thing is once we moved out of that house, we did find out, my father, stepfather did find out that there was witchcraft performed in the house.
Yeah.
And you know, it was only a good guess, you know.
Sure.
You know, with the black walls and the mirrors all the way down. It, you know, it was what it was, you know. I just didn't care what had happened in the house is what did happen, you know, at the time. But now, me being who I am today, I want to know what has happened in this house and why, and let's see what's happening today.
When you found out about, or your father found out about there being witchcraft or black magic being performed in the house, how did he find that out, and who was doing those things in the house? Was it just a former renter, or?
He yelled at the neighbors. You know, he's like, "What the heck is this?" And you know, then he asked the owner of the house what was going on, and then we got most of the information from the neighbors.
Okay,
you know, he says they were performing some type of black magic rituals and shit in the backyard, things like that, and then in the house, and you know, and then they got evicted.
Okay.
You know, because they weren't paying their rent and stuff like that. And that's where he got that information from, the owner.
Okay.
Of the property. So, you know, it was just little by little things started falling into place. It's, you know, you don't ask these questions much when, you know, rent a house.
Sure.
Especially in the early 80s, you don't think about that.
Let me ask you about how, obviously, when you have these things going on, you're... fear level, your concern level, your anxiety level, all that will go up as the situation escalates and as things continue to happen. But and this may be a difficult question to answer just because of perspective and just being in the house and things happening so early on. But did you, when you initially got into the house, before really things started amping up or before things started happening, to an extent where it was like, there's no way that this is just a coincidence. Do you recall having any sort of uneasy feeling in the house when you first entered it, or did all that kind of come on once the event started unfolding?
When you first got into the house, if you went into the front door of the house, I got it all drawn down. I know exactly the layout of the house.
Yeah.
Even to this, when you first walked into the front door of this house,
mm-hmm.
you looked at the whole living room. I mean, the house was old. Okay.
Yeah.
And just look at it, you're like, you know, because when I was a kid, I watched Addams Family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A lot of that family, the Munsters. Now, if you put kind of the front door entry to the Munsters entry, that's what it looked like to me.
Okay.
Okay. And I was like, oh, wow. You know, this is kind of freaky. You know, and the feeling you got as soon as we hit the stairwell to go upstairs, it was, I do know how to explain it now, but when I was a kid, you know, I didn't think about things like that. You get a feeling like somebody's looking at you, like you're being looked at.
Yeah.
But then you think, oh, well, you know, it's your brothers or it's your dad or whatever. But that's the feeling that I got. And my brothers too, to this day, see, my brother Joe,
mm-hmm.
to this day, just put it this way, my friend, he doesn't want anything to do with the paranormal
because
mm-hmm. it scared him so bad that I borrowed one of his camcorders a long, long time ago. This was like 15, 16 years ago. I borrowed a camcorder of his, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to do an investigation. And I didn't tell him what I was using it for.
Mm-hmm.
And when I brought it back to him, he goes, so how'd it go, man? He goes, what'd you use the camcorder? And I said, I did a paranormal investigation at this place. And he goes, all right. He goes, get that freaking thing out of my house. He goes, you can keep it. I don't want it. So on and so forth, get it out of my house. You know, that's how Joey is. He didn't want to have anything to do with that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
You know, even go near it. See, he was even the older brother, and it screwed with him just as much, you know?
Sure.
And, you know, nowadays, you know, Joey, he don't let me borrow GoPros. He won't let me. I have to go purchase my own stuff because he knows what I'll do.
Yeah.
You know, he knows me.
Sure.
You know, it had a different effect on each one of us in the house. Mine was, it put me on a road someplace different. I started doing things at 15 years old, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of held back on doing it because I was afraid I was going to meet this thing with the red eyes again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, doing what I was going to do or trying to talk to somebody through a tape recorder or whatever, I was going to cause and stir up some more trouble that I didn't need in my other house.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was kind of like stay silent, you know, don't go near the stuff. But as I started moving on through my high school years and friends talking about things that are happening, then it, you know, I decided then I was going to start doing what I do.
Yeah.
And I didn't really realize at the time that I, you know, building things like this was really going to change my life in looking for, you know.
Sure.
You know, the afterlife type scenario.
Sure. But when you
I started looking.
When you left the house after the 2 months, were things calm after that where you ended up going to, or did things continue to some extent?
Nothing like that.
No.
Once we were gone, it was all said and done.
Yeah.
And whatever was in the house basically did not want us in the house.
Yeah.
I know this to the, you know, this now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like physically and mentally pushing us from this house.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I ask that because, and I want to ask this too, because it one thing I find to be very fascinating about haunting experiences and specifically haunted houses is sometimes you have families that go through an experience there, or only certain members of a family go through a certain experience there, and then they leave and then nothing happens. And then you have to wonder, okay, is it... There seems to be varying degrees of the hauntings where it will make itself known to anyone, no matter who they are, no matter what level of sensitivity they have, whether it be 0 or a 10. And then for some haunting cases, you have folks where it's almost the perfect storm. You have a group of sensitive people moving into a very active house, and they'll all pick up on stuff that the average family that is at a 0 wouldn't even know is going on. With your family, was there anybody in there, in that group, that you would consider to be more sensitive than normal? Or was it just such a powerful haunting that it doesn't matter what your sensitivity level is, you would have had something happen to you had you been in the house at that time?
Yeah, it didn't matter.
Yep.
It didn't matter. Whatever was in there, nobody had, like, oh, what is that? I don't know. What's going on? Is there something behind me? Is there something touching me?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't anything. I mean, never got touched. We never felt really anything except the first initial walk into a home. When you're a child, it's creepy. It's cool.
Sure.
You know? And, you know, and then when it all started, it just started happening. And then pretty much, it was like a volume control. Okay? You had it on one for just the little stuff, the footsteps, the knocking, the scratching on the wall. And then it started going up to a 4 where it would break the glass, and then a 5 where it would start busting the toy. 6. You know, then it would go with the knives in the closet, and then it went straight to a full 10. I'm talking, you know, people being pulled off bed, doors slamming into faces. You know, it was pissed. I don't know what it was, but it was pissed. And I think most of it really stemmed from my stepbrother thinking he was going to be a little Barney badass at the time when we were young,
mm-hmm.
and take things into his own hand and say he can, you know, I could take care of this guy. I'm going to kick his ass. You know,
yeah.
I'm gonna, you know, he thought he was bad, you know?
Sure.
And no, that wasn't the case. All that did was just amp it up.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Jeff Conkle about memories that do not fade. In part 2 of our conversation, available to Gravekeepers exclusively, we'll ask Jeff, was the house that he grew up in so infested with paranormal activity that almost anyone could feel the spirits there, not just those that are sensitive? Does Jeff think that the spirits ever try to physically harm people? Or is their goal more so the long game of long-term psychological damage? Has anyone else ever lived on the property, and have they had experiences there? And is there ever a way to make peace with a property like this, or a way to fully eradicate spirits from a location? All of that and more in the second half of our conversation with Jeff. To hear it, you need to be a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. This show is supported by you guys. That's how we're able to do this. That's how I've made this my career. Interviewing folks, sharing their stories, having these conversations is through your support. If you like what you hear and you'd like more of it, please support our program. In exchange, you'll get access to part two of hundreds of our interviews. You'll also get access to other exclusives like advanced episodes of the program weeks before they're released to the public. You do so by signing up at thegravetalks.com. Just click Become a Gravekeeper or patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month is all we ask. And like I said, in exchange, access to all of the exclusive part twos of our interviews, hundreds of them waiting for you to binge away on, as well as advanced episodes of our program not released yet to the public months in advance before everybody else. Thegravetalks.com. Click Become a Gravekeeper or go to patreon.com/The Grave Talks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.